वासुदेवाय
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 12 एंटाइटल्ड बियॉन्ड रेनन्सिएशन एंड नॉलेज टेक्स्ट 1 एंड 2
श्री भगवान वाच नरोद्यति माम योगो नरोद्यति माम योगो न सांख्यां धर्म एवच न सांख्यां धर्म एवच नास्वाध्यायस्तपस्त्यागो न स्वाध्यायस्तपस्त्यागो नेस्तापूर्तं न दक्षिणा नेस्तापूर्तं न दक्षिणा श्री भगवान उवाच न रोद्यति मां योगो न सांख्यां धर्म एव च न स्वाध्यायस्तपस्त्यागो नेस्तापूर्तं न दक्षिणा श्री भगवान उवाच न रोद्यति मां योगो न सांख्यं धर्मेव च न स्वाध्यायस्तपस्त्यागो नेस्तापूर्तं न दक्षिणा श्री भगवान उवाच निष्ठापूर्तं न दक्षिणा
Read the translation. Mataji would like to send. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. One may perform the Ashtanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice non-violence and other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances, and dig wells, plant trees, and perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control. We are continuing to read the purport from what was spoken yesterday. This is like a three-section purport. We'll cover the second section of this purport. were put by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One may study the examples of Vratani or vows. The injunction that one should fast on Ekadasi is a permanent vow for all Vaishnavas. And one should not conclude from these verses that one may neglect the Ekadasi vow. The superiority of satsang or association with pure devotees in awarding the fruit of love of Godhead does not mean that one should give up other processes or that these secondary processes are not permanent factors in Bhakti Yoga. There are many Vedic injunctions instructing one to execute the Agnihotra sacrifice, and the modern day followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also occasionally execute fire sacrifices. Such sacrifice is recommended by the Lord Himself in the previous chapters, and therefore it should not be given up by the devotees of the Lord. By performing Vedic ritualistic and purificatory processes, one is gradually elevated to the platform of devotional service, whereupon one is able to directly worship the Absolute Truth. One Vedic injunction states, the results awarded by fasting continuously for 1 month on 6 different occasions can easily be achieved simply by accepting a handful of rice offered to Lord Vishnu. This facility is especially offered in Kali Yuga. Nevertheless, regulated fasting on Ekadasi is not an impediment to spiritual advancement. Rather, it is a perpetual aspect of devotional service and can be considered an auxiliary principle supporting the main principle of worshipping Lord Krishna and His devotees. Because such secondary principles help one become fit for executing the primary process of devotional service, they are also greatly beneficial. Therefore, such secondary principles are widely mentioned throughout Vedic literature. It may be concluded that such secondary principles are essential for advancement in Krishna consciousness, and therefore one should never give up the principles of Vrata, the execution of prescribed vows. In the previous chapter, Srila Sridhar Swami mentioned that the words Agyayasam Gunam Dosham, Bhagavatam 11.11.32, indicate that a devotee should select Vedic principles that do not conflict with his service to the Lord. Many of the elaborate Vedic ceremonies and complicated procedures for fasting, demigod worship and yoga practice cause great disturbance to the supreme process of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, hearing and chanting about the Lord. Therefore, they are rejected by the Vaishnavas. However, the processes helpful to devotional service should be accepted. The example can be given of Maharaj Yudhishthir, who was instructed by the dying Bhishma. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.27, Bhishma instructs King Yudhishthir in Dana Dharma or public acts of charity, Raja Dharma or the duties of a king, Moksha Dharma or the duties for salvation, Stri Dharma or duties for women, and ultimately Bhagavad Dharma or pure devotional service to the Lord. Bhishma did not limit his discussion to Bhagavad Dharma because Lord Krishna gave Maharaj Yudhishthir the devotional service of acting as a king, and to execute his service, Yudhishthir Maharaj required extensive knowledge of civic affairs. However, one who is not rendering such prescribed devotional service in society should not unnecessarily involve himself in material world, even by the practice of Vedic rituals. Nothing should distract him from the ultimate goal of satisfying Lord Krishna. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru
శ్రీయుత పదకమలం శ్రీ గురుణ్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీ రూపం సాగరజాతాం సహగణా రఘునాథాం వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావదూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్య దేవం శ్రీ రాధా కృష్ణ పదాన్ సహగణా లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితం చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధు జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి విషభానుసుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వంచకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః జై శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాత్సాది గౌర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే
హరే కృష్ణ. Very grateful and happy to be able to speak something on this very exalted subject matter of the discussion between Krishna and Uddhava, which is also very famously known as the Uddhava Gita. So, in this particular section of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is giving Uddhava an instruction, and the context of what Krishna is trying to speak and what I'm going to focus on is on the fact that the many aspects of bhakti, or rather the path of devotional service, are many times covered or packaged within certain other elements. Like, for example, here Krishna is speaking about taking vows, following some vratas, you know, following some principles, austerities, etc. So many times people tend to confuse that these principles are more important than the essence of the principles. In fact, the human mind has a tendency to give them greater importance because they seem to be very, very powerful, or rather, you know, little complicated. Like, for example, when Adhik Mas comes, or when Kartik Mas comes, there are certain set of rituals that are connected with the essence. Like, for example, offering the lamp to Krishna, or following certain vows of not eating, abstaining from something, or Chaturmas, the 4 months, you know. Or sometimes people take vows of going to holy places and things like that. So now, all these vows, or all these external part of the rituals, they sometimes takes greater prominence over the essence of why we are doing it. So here in the purport, the emphasis is on what is the essence of all these rituals. The essence is very clearly samsiddhir haritoshanam, satisfaction of Krishna, pleasure of Krishna. There's nothing else which is the essence. But many times, when this essence is forgotten, a lot of emphasis and focus is given on the ritualistic part of it, which unfortunately kind of takes us away from the essence many times. So, whenever such things happen, we are given a treatment, or rather a re-emphasis on the essence. And that's what Krishna is doing here with Uddhava. He is re-emphasizing that though all these rituals are there, you know, Krishna's exact words, he is saying, my dear Uddhava, associating with my pure devotees can destroy one's attachments for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. Now this is the essence. How connecting with Krishna and associating with the devotees conquers the Lord, pleases the Lord. One may perform Ashtanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice non-violence and other ordinary principles of piety. Krishna is calling them ordinary principles of piety. Chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances, dig wells, plant trees, and perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigod, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places also, and accept major, minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control. So here, Krishna is talking about the difference between doing all the rituals and focusing on the essence of all the rituals. And that's what today's discussion is going to be centered around. And the way I'm going to bring out this discussion is bringing out many interesting similarities between the way the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna, which is again another instruction set, and the way Krishna's life personally and the way the Ramayana is presented. All this, when you put together and analyze it from this point of view, there's a lot of beautiful understandings that we can get about this aspect. I'll begin with a story. There was a doctor, there was a businessman actually, who went on a business tour somewhere, and he was sleeping in a 5-star hotel, you know, beautiful bed, beautiful setting. Somehow, while he was sleeping, he got a dream, rather a very realistic vision, you know. He felt that a bug had entered into his ears, and that bug was going, you know, so he's kind of imagining all this, you know, he's going inside his ears, from the ears it's going inside, and it has entered the brain, and in the brain it is messing up some things over there, you know. And this man, he got up with horror, because suddenly he could actually feel the bug inside his brain, you know, moving around here and there, and so he panicked. He called up the, you know, the reception and said, I need help, emergency, and they called the best doctors in the city, and a lot of tests and a lot of, you know, diagnosis was done. There was actually nothing. They couldn't do anything to help him. But this man kept feeling that there's a bug running around in my brain. He went to hundreds of doctors, he went to so many places, and somehow or the other, no one was able to treat him because he just felt that the bug is live running around in his brain. Finally, he went to one particular doctor in a hospital, and the doctor said, I can cure you, but the cure is very, very complicated and difficult. He said, anything do but cure me. You know. The doctor said, this disease or this bug can be removed only by one particular medicine that has to be brought all the way from Germany. He said, get it, I'll pay whatever is needed. And the doctor said, it'll take me a few days to get it. You have to get admitted and we have to do serious tests and all that. So this fellow said, do anything. They actually admitted him and there were all kinds of tests done. And he told this man, you have to send somebody, you know, to one particular place where the medicine will be delivered, the parcel will be delivered from Germany. He sent his people and finally the box came, you know. And this doctor was so excited when he received the box. And he tells this man, finally the medicine has come, now the treatment can begin, you know. And this man was excited when he saw those tubes, you know, 3 tubes were there, all the way from Germany, you know. And he gave the first injection. And he said, with this first injection, the bug will start coming out of your brain, you know. And this man could actually feel that a bug is coming out from his brain, you know. And then a second injection was given. And he said, the second injection is more important than the first one, because it will actually start bringing the bug out, you know. And he said the third injection cannot be given in the body, it has to be given in the ears. And then finally the third injection was given in the ears, and actually people saw a bug coming out from with that water, you know, out of the ears. This man felt so relieved. He was so grateful to the doctor that he cured him of this massive catastrophe. The doctor, he eventually called all his medical students for like a explanation of how the treatment took place. He explained to them that these 3 bottles were nothing but distilled water, that's all. There's nothing in it, only water, you know. And it has not got from Germany or anywhere else, it has got from one of the taps in the hospital, you know. But they had to make this whole thing in such a way, because this man was convinced there is a bug inside his brain. All the doctors told him there is nothing, but he was just not understanding. So when this whole ritual was done, this fellow understood that the bug actually came out. The doctor said the toughest part of this whole treatment was finding a bug. It took me so many days to actually catch a bug, which I could put into the water and inject it, basically. So many times, certain diseases that we have and the certain sets, mindsets that we have to be treated in certain ways. So the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam prescribes certain treatments, and Krishna's ways of treating different diseases are very different. And apparently we might find that, what is he doing, you know, why is he speaking certain things, you know. But there is a treatment going on. And the treatment is very subtle. And the treatment depends on the person that is being treated. That's the whole context in which we are going to discuss the thing that I'm going to speak about. So, we find that when we study the Bhagavad Gita, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, there is a very interesting phenomena that happens with two people. So we find Suryaputra Karna and Indraputra is Arjun. And in Treta Yuga we find Suryaputra is Sugriv and Indraputra is Vali. And apparently we find there is a complete change in personalities in these two people. Indraputra is villain in one and a hero in the other. Suryaputra is villain in one and hero in the other, you know. So apparently, the understanding many people feel is, you know, Krishna balances things, you know. One time he punished one person, one time he punished another person. One time he did kripa to one person, another time he did kripa to another person. So, I mean, how do you understand this? Who does God help actually? God helps somebody who does not have pride, does not have abhiman or the ego. So one who is devoid of the feeling of me gets the kripa, basically. Now he doesn't bother if it is Indraputra or, you know, Suryaputra. That doesn't matter to him. What matters is who is devoid of the feeling of abhiman or pride. So in Sugriv's case, we find Sugriv apparently appears to be weak. He apparently appears to have no character also, you know. Apparently he appears to have no courage also. But he has one quality. The quality that he has is of patience. You cannot demand kripa. It comes on its own. When it will come, how it will come, we can't say. But the way to get access to that kripa is through association of somebody saintly. Here in this verse, Krishna begins the verse by saying that, my dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachments for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. So here, what is that association that Sugriva had access to? The association of a saint, Hanumanji. And as soon as you have association of a saintly person, your weakness can actually become an asset in getting Bhagavad Kripa. So, Hanumanji brought Sugriv to God, to Lord Ram, through the path of Kripa and not through the path of sadhana. So here, when we find that, when Sugriv looks at Ram and Lakshman, he actually has a doubt. He actually feels that it's danger. So when a materialistic person looks at God as God, at God consciousness, he feels very dangerous. Let me avoid it, you know. So Hanumanji, when he went down and met Lord Ram, he could have easily signaled. Actually, Sugriv told him, you should face in my direction. And I will keep observing you from top. Just by seeing your facial expressions, I will understand whether I should run away or I should stay. Because he thought, you know, if he finds that these are Vali's people, I'll start running, so I'll have some upper hand, you know. So Hanuman could have easily signaled Sugriv to come. But rather, he asks Ram to come with him. So generally, the idea is that
a patient goes to the doctor. But here, the doctor is going to the patient, you know. So now, Hanumanji explains to Ram why he has to go to Sugriva. And the explanation he gives is very interesting, because he says, my dear Lord, Sugriva is tired of running. And he has been running all over the world practically, you know, from hiding from Vali. So he said, now he is so tired of running that he can't move anywhere. So he says, if a person is so sick that he can't move anywhere, doctor only has to go to him. So he tells him that, you know, please you come to Sugriva. And the interesting thing is, he does not give Ram the trouble of walking up the mountain. He carries him on his back. So here is a very interesting role of how Kripa comes to a person's doorstep, literally. Carried on Hanumanji's back. That's what a devotee's role is in our lives. We are sick, running from the whole world, miserable, fed up of running, you know. And at that point of time, a devotee like Hanumanji carries the Lord on his shoulder and brings the Lord to us, to somebody who is sick, tired of running around. When Srila Prabhupada was asked by his disciples, what is our qualification to practice bhakti? Prabhupada said, you have no qualification. I created your qualification. So Prabhupada was somebody who carried the Lord with him to people who were sick and could not move anywhere. They were so tired and so sick that they actually removed all their clothes also. They didn't want to move anywhere, you know, they were so fed up. That's what the whole hippie movement was about, you know. Tired of the whole world, tired of running around. So, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata talks about two different mindsets, or two different approaches towards life. And when you study both these books together, it actually clarifies a lot of your thought process and the understanding of bhakti. One talks about adarsh or ideals, and one talks about yatharth or realities. The Ramayana talks about ideals of life, and the Mahabharata talks about realities of life. So in the Ramayana, when the war begins between Lord Ram and Ravan, there's a very interesting conversation that happens between Vibhishan and Lord Ram. So Ravan is in a chariot, well-decked chariot with an armor, with all kinds of weapons and fully loaded armory, you know. And Lord Ram is on the ground. He doesn't have any much weapons. This is bow and a few arrows. He doesn't have an armor, you know. He's wearing his deer skin and tree bark. He doesn't even have footwear. Bharat took it away, you know. I mean, can you imagine what kind of a warrior he is, you know, apparently. So Vibhishan asked Lord Ram, my dear Lord, what is your situation? How are you going to fight this such a powerful war? You don't even have a chariot. Lord Ram asked Indra for the chariot. Indra also didn't send the chariot immediately, you know. Can you imagine, you know, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lakshmipati, you know, and he is literally without anything. So Lord Ram gives Ravan a very interesting answer. Sorry, Vibhishan a very interesting answer. He tells him, to fight the Dharma Yudha, you don't need a chariot which is physical in nature. You need what is known as Dharma Ratha. And what is Dharma Ratha? To fight the anarthas, or Durgun basically, which represents Ravan and all the demons, to fight the anarthas, we have to be standing on a chariot, which is known Dharma Ratha. What is the chariot? The chariot of good qualities. If you have the chariot of good qualities, you know, standing on the chariot of good qualities, you can fight with any enemy. That's Ram's understanding of how to fight with Ravan. And immediately Vibhishan understands this. Ram apparently externally doesn't have a chariot, but he's standing on a chariot, which is Dharma Ratha. So, in the Mahabharata, we find that the beginning of the Mahabharata begins with Duryodhan introducing all the stalwarts of the Pandava and Kaurava army to Bhishma. And then Arjun asks Krishna to bring the chariot to the middle of the war. And then he sees his family, his guru, his grandfather, and immediately his bow collapses. And he is completely bewildered. So here we find, in the Ramayana, we find Lord is not on a chariot, but he is fighting the war. In the Mahabharata, we find Lord is on the chariot, but he is not fighting the war. You know. So in Ramayana, we talk about ideals, and the Mahabharata talks about reality. You know. So what is the ideal situation? The ideal situation is God fights for us. God wins all our battles. But what is the reality? Reality is that you have to fight your own battle. God only will guide you. He'll be sitting on your chariot, but you fight. That's the reality of life. So, just like for example, if you take a example of a disease. Now when you look at a disease, suppose somebody has a diseased condition. And then the other is an ideal condition or a healthy condition. So Mahabharata talks about a diseased condition of life and Ramayana talks about a healthy condition of life. In the Mahabharata, you get a clear picture of society. You get a clear picture of human beings, basically. Of what individuals really are. But the Ramayana gives us an understanding of what individuals should ideally be. Just like if somebody goes to a doctor and does an X-ray of the knee or some part of the body, you know. Now what does the X-ray do to you? X-ray gives you an inside picture. What is happening inside the body, you know. And so the Mahabharata is like an X-ray. It gives you an inside picture of what is happening inside you. Now, when you look at the inside picture, it is very surprising. Such great people, Bhishma, Drona, had weaknesses. Very difficult to understand and imagine, you know, because the inside picture is always horrible. Now, although the X-ray gives an inside picture, do you ever find people hanging X-rays on the wall, you know? Picture of your X-ray, inside picture. You'll never find people hanging X-rays on the wall. You'll find people hanging the photos of their external self, which looks healthy apparently, which looks great apparently. So Ramayana gives you ideal pictures. So when you look at the characters of the Ramayana, Bharat, Lord Ram, Lakshman, you start getting bewildered. I cannot be this. These are ideal people, you know. And therefore, a lot of people don't like to read Ramayana. They like to read Mahabharata because it looks more like them, you know. Brothers fighting. Wow, that's how we are, you know. You look at Bhishma, Drona having weaknesses. If they can have weaknesses, I also can have weaknesses. So people are very comfortable with seeing great people weak, which is the reality of the world. But when they see ideal people, they just feel very uncomfortable. So therefore, when you study the Mahabharata without guidance, you actually tend to misunderstand. What is the purpose of taking an X-ray? The purpose of taking an X-ray is to find the disease and go to the hospital for cure. Now you don't find the X-ray to just become comfortable. Are andar kharab hai. Theek, fine, you know. Now you take an X-ray so that you take action, cure your disease basically. And similarly, the X-ray, the Mahabharata tells us all the weaknesses that are within us. Once you identify those weaknesses, you deal with them. You start facing them and you start helping yourself curing them. And therefore, the Mahabharata tells us who we are. And the Mahabharata and the Ramayana tells us how we should be. So interestingly, in the Mahabharata, though there is an exposure of who we are, clear exposure of all the weaknesses. Within the Mahabharata is Gita embedded, which talks about ideals, which tells you how you should be. The Gita is a very interesting part of the Mahabharata because Gita doesn't deal with weaknesses. It tells you ideals. It tells you what should be the principles you follow so that your X-ray can get rectified and you become healthy person. There is no damage inside. Unfortunately for us, the reality is very different. Like one wise man, he went to a group of students, you know, and he asked all the students, which book do you like? Do you like Ramayana or do you like Mahabharata, you know? And all the people said, you know, somebody said Ramayana, somebody said Mahabharata, somebody said Bhagavat. And this man, he said, you tell me, if I ask you really what you like, nobody will say Mahabharata, Ramayana, they will say Harry Potter, you know. Because the reality is something else only, you know. So when you give options of something that is too good, and you give options of what the reality is very different, basically. So our reality is that our likes for the Mahabharata, Ramayana, neither we like it. We like something different only, some masala, you know, some gossip. That's what our likes are. So essentially, when you look at the way demons are faced, it's very interesting in the way we face demons. Like for example, in the Bhagavatam, we find Krishna facing demons right from his childhood. Literally from the day he's born, he's facing demons one after another. Putana comes in a few days, then one by one, Tanavarta, Akasurva, so many demons keep coming all the time. By the time Krishna is 11 or 12 years old, by the time he kills Kamsa when he is 11 and a half years old, literally, you know. So Ram kills his first demon, Tataka, when he is 12 years old. So he kind of doesn't deal with demons in the beginning, and then he starts dealing with demons later, basically. So when you look at the way in which Ram deals with demonic personalities and wars, and when Krishna, the way Krishna deals with wars and demons is very different. Just like Krishna, when he is in the middle of the Mahabharata war, he is not bothered about saving the soldiers of the Pandavas. In fact, when the whole opposite army is destroyed, the whole Akshani, all the soldiers of Kauravas are destroyed, Krishna's worry is how to destroy the one Akshani Sena remaining of the Pandavas also. And that's why he sent Ashwatthama later, you know. I mean, of course, Ashwatthama goes on his own, but inspired by the Paramatma within his heart, right? So Krishna is worried how to destroy the one Akshani Sena which is inside the Pandava camp. So he takes Pandavas on a Tirth Yatra. And then Ashwatthama comes and destroys everything inside. In contrast to Krishna's behavior, in the Ramayana we find Ram's behavior very different. So when Ravana is killing all the monkeys and the demons are being killed by Ram and the Vanaras, Indra eventually, of course, sends a chariot to help Lord Ram, seeing Ram's humility, and then Indra asks Ram, what can I do for you? And Ram asks Indra to give the celestial nectar to revive the monkeys who are dead. So Ram apparently revives all the, of course, the demons are not revived because, you know, Ravana throws all the demons into the ocean, basically. And Ram apparently doesn't revive the demons, he revives the monkeys. But the question is, at least Ram is reviving the monkeys. Why is Krishna destroying even the one Akshani Sena that is left of the Pandavas? Not just the Akshani Sena, even the sons of the Pandavas are destroyed by Krishna. You know. So many times, people get a little bewildered when they see Krishna's actions in this way. You know. So how do you understand it? That apparently in one incarnation he is merciful and in another incarnation he is so ruthless, you know. So the understanding is, who is bigger? The person who destroys is bigger or the person who saves is bigger? Apparently from our point of view, the person who saves seems to be bigger. So apparently from our point of view, Ram is bigger because he is saving the monkeys at least. And Krishna is like destroying even the ones that are on the side of the Pandavas. So now, if you see it from another perspective, we find that the whole concept of birth and death is very different when you see it from the perspective of the universal form of the Lord. Lord Ram, when he was, this is not exactly in the Valmiki Ramayana, but this is a folk tale connected to the Ramayana, very interesting story. Lord Ram, when he's in Pampa Sarovar, at one point he shoots an arrow on the ground to invoke the, you know, the celestial water. And when he does that, he sees some blood coming out. So he digs a little bit and he finds there's actually a frog inside who is hurt by the arrow of Lord Ram. So Lord Ram asks this frog, why didn't you shout out to me that you are hurt by my arrow? I would have saved you, you know, I could have helped you. The frog tells him a very interesting answer. And the answer actually makes you think, you know. The frog tells him, my dear Lord, when I saw the arrow, when the arrow hit me, I was actually wanting to call out to you. But then when I saw that the person who shot the arrow is you only, I said, what do I do now? You know? So the person who is supposed to save me is destroying me. What can I do now? So this is a very interesting way of seeing what is the meaning of saving and destroying. Krishna has two roles in this world. One, he has the role of being a messenger to the Pandavas. And second, he shows this role as a universal form. Time, I am. Kalosmi, Bharata, Shabha. The whole role of Krishna as time element. So apparently it feels that One role he is good and another role he is bad. Life and death are two aspects of a person. We tend to love life and we tend to hate death. Because we always see it from a small perspective. Our eyes are incomplete in seeing the realities. But when we see from the perspective of the universal form, life and death are both truths in understanding God and understanding the role of God. Once you understand God, your perspective of death only changes. And therefore, Krishna is the chariot driver and he is also the universal form at the same time. So that means creation and destruction both go hand in hand. In the Mahabharata, good and bad all mixed up complicatedly, you know. You can't say this is good and this is bad. They are all so complicatedly mixed up. So Krishna says all bad elements of in a person just destroy everyone, you know. Even though apparently there may be some good in those people. But in Treta Yuga, in Ram's time, the good and bad are very clearly separate. Not too difficult to separate the two. Very clearly demons are bad and very clearly the monkeys were good. So that kind of separation was very easy. Like for example, we find in Lord Ram's family, Kaushalya, born in a very pious family, she herself very pious. But if you look at Krishna, born to Devaki, a very pious personality, but sister of Kamsa. Complicated life, you know. And therefore, Krishna has to kill his own uncle, you know. Now, when Devaki married Vasudev and Kamsa wanted to have the honor of driving the chariot, you know. So Devaki and Vasudev become very touched by the gesture of Kamsa to drive the chariot. And immediately as soon as Kamsa starts driving, there is an Akashvani that tells that, you know, the eighth child of Devaki is going to kill him. The many people wonder, why did the Akashvani happen? They are having such a nice family, everything so beautiful going on, why the hell the Akashvani had to happen in between, you know? So now, apparently, there seems to be no reason for the Akashvani, but actually there is a very deep reason. A psychological reason behind why Krishna created that Akashvani, you know? He wanted to show that those who appear good from an external behavior are not necessarily good. Apparently, Kamsa was very good from an external behavior. Driving chariot of sister, very good, you know. Being a king or being a prince, whatever, you know. So now, that's the first reason. He wanted to show, as soon as Akashvani happens, you find good and bad. Dood ka dood, pani ka pani ho jata hai, you know. Whether this was good or bad, you only figure out, you know. The second reason why Krishna did this is more interesting. Why Krishna created the Akashvani? The second reason is that he felt very bad for Vasudev and Devaki being guided by Kamsa. Now as I was saying, Ram mentioned this to Vibhishan that when you want to fight against Durjan, when you want to fight against bad qualities, you need to be sitting on Dharmarath. And the Dharmarath has to be driven by a Sarathi, a good driver. And what is that good driver? The process of Sadhana Bhakti. That has to be driving your Dharmaratha. But here, in Krishna's family, I mean his own mother and father, being driven by Kamsa. So he said, how will that Rath be a Dharmarath when the driver is Kamsa over there, you know? So then, and that's the whole idea behind the Akashvani, you know. He said, isko nikalo pahle. Get him off the chariot, you know. He can't be driving your life. You're beginning your married life. I am going to be born to you. And you are allowing your Dharmaratri to be driven by a demon. As soon as Akashvani began, he stopped driving, you know, basically. Now, when you look at it from this point of view, we understand that there is a representation behind these aspects. Arjun was sick. And therefore Krishna gave him medicine, which is the Bhagavad Gita. Apparently, when we need to start preparing ourselves when it comes to certain types of weathers. Like for example, when you have bad weather, you know, like rains or whatever, monsoon season, you know. Either you prepare yourself for handling the bad weather by taking an umbrella. Or second thing is you at least prepare yourself mentally by being ready to tolerate, you know. So the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about tolerance, which is what the focus of the Gita is. So Krishna begins the whole Gita by speaking about Sita Pragya, the whole concept of Sita Pragya. Sita Pragya essentially means that the focus is on self-improvement. But the Ramayana, Ram doesn't speak so much about Sita Pragya, but he speaks about saintliness. And the mood of saintliness is sensitivity. So if we study the whole Ramayana is centered around being sensitive to others. Ram is trying to be sensitive to his mother, to even his stepmother who is bad to him. He's being sensitive to the people. He's being sensitive to even Ravan to a great extent, you know. He's being sensitive to practically everyone. So here on one side, Krishna speaks about Sita Pragya, self-improvement. On the other side, Ramayana talks about being sensitive. Because we're dealing with totally different aspects of life. Like for example, the whole idea of winning and losing. When Jatayu sees Ravan being kidnapped by kidnapping Sita, he challenges Ravan and he dies. Now, from the worldly point of view, he lost. But what is loss and gain? Now, Krishna, when he speaks to Arjun, he speaks about how you should see loss and gain equally. Not be affected by loss and gain. And that's what a bird in the Ramayana did. Not affected by loss and gain, but focused on the aspect of doing. So in the Gita, Krishna speaks about two kinds of faith. Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. He says, Lokesmi Dvivida Anishta Pura Prokta Mayanaga Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. So here, when we look at the way Krishna is speaking about Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga, apparently it seems that Krishna doesn't give so much focus to Bhakti Yoga. You know, why does not Krishna focus on very few chapters, much later, Krishna starts focusing on Bhakti Yoga. Why? Because the audience that he is talking to, Arjun, from the first, literally the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjun has already surrendered to Krishna. Shishyasteyam Shalimam Ram Parpannam. Already he is practicing Bhakti Yoga from the beginning, you know. First, second chapter, the moment Krishna starts speaking, Krishna speaks only after Arjun surrenders to him. So Arjun understands Bhakti Yoga very well. The problem is he doesn't understand Karma Yoga well. And therefore Krishna speaks Karma Yoga properly, you know. So the audience, at this point when Arjuna is surrendering to Krishna for asking him for guidance, he is very, very close to Bhakti Yoga, but he is very far from Jnana and Karma. And therefore, seeing his kith and kin, he starts developing attachment. And because this attachment signifies a lack of Jnana, so he puts down his bow, he puts down his arrows, he's saying, I don't want to do karma. So now he has a lack of jnana, because of which the attachment is very strong, and that lack of jnana makes him give up his karma also, give up his duties also. And therefore, Krishna speaks the whole concept of karma yoga in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. And to look at it from another point of view, Bhakti Yoga is not separate from karma and jnana. They are very much in connection. In essence, it is, you know, both are the same. So, just like when you look at the body and the soul, the karma, the concept of karma is the external body, and bhakti is the soul of the body. So, apparently, if you see from the aspects that Krishna speaks about, it seems that he is not focusing on something and he is focusing on something else. But that's not the fact. It's very much embedded within it, each other. Just like, for example, in the Bhagavad Puran, we find that very clearly talks about Krishna being God, Vishnu being the Supreme Lord, basically. But, and of course, it talks about Indra and the demigods being lesser than the Lord. So Indra is a post which can be attained by doing punya, basically. And apparently it shows Indra worshipping the Supreme Lord and all that. But in the same Bhagavad Puran, we find a story of Vishnu being the younger brother of Indra. Therefore, he's called as Upendra, Vamanadev, you know. One of the names of the Lord is Upendra. Now, when we find that somebody who is superior to Indra has become his younger brother, that actually increases the glory of Vishnu. Because he is so humble that he is ready to become the younger brother of somebody whom he is much superior to. And therefore, we find that Indra apparently represents Karma Yoga, actions, and Vishnu represents Bhakti Yoga. In Gita, Bhakti Yoga follows Karma Yoga. And apparently, but of course, the way it is, they are all embedded to each other. Just like Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are like Ganga and Yamuna, two rivers. Initially, both begin at separate places. Ganga begins at Gangotri, Yamuna begins at Yamunotri. But eventually, though both of them begin at separate places, they originate in the Himalayas only. Their origin is one place only, the Himalayas. And for a long distance, they flow on different paths. But in Prayag, they come back together again. You know, they come back, they intersect again together. So after that, so essentially, we find that when we find Ganga flowing alone, so apparently it seems that Ganga is flowing alone, but actually Yamuna is part of it also. Because the origin is same only, you know. So apparently we find Karma Yoga flowing alone in certain sections of Gita. But actually you should understand both of them originate in the same place only, you know. And eventually they intersect, eventually they meet. So in this particular verse that we are dealing with and we are talking about, Krishna apparently he is trying to keep all these things aside. He is saying that, you know, pious activities, fasting, you know, all the ritualistic things, you know, he's saying by doing all this, it's not necessarily that you'll get me. He's telling Uddhava over here, you know, by doing all these activities, don't think that you'll get me. But what he's trying to say is that he's not saying that don't do these activities. He's trying to say, don't look at these activities as separated from bhakti. When we look at these activities as being separate and having their own merit, that's when the problem begins. Going to Vrindavan or to holy places during Adhik Mas is not a problem. But when you look at the activity itself as the important thing and not the essence of the activity, which is the element of bhakti and connecting with Krishna, that's when it becomes a problem. So the intersection, the connection between the two is what Krishna is trying to emphasize in this verse of the Gita. And therefore, in this context, when we look at the whole understanding of the Gita, it actually makes a lot of sense. Just like sometimes a mother gives a child a sweet and tells the child that if you do your work, I'll give you the sweet. Now, why is she giving the sweet? To inspire him to do the work. But if the child becomes so addicted to the sweet and he forgets the work, you know, that loses the focus of the mother. That doesn't make any sense. So similarly, in many of the Vedic rituals that are prescribed in the Vedas are like sweet. Mother is giving sweet to the child. If you do this, then I'll give you sweet, you know. But many children get so attracted to the sweet that they forget the work, you know. And therefore, Krishna has to re-emphasize it every time. Say, you eat sweets, no problem. But don't forget why I'm giving you the sweet. The reason I'm giving you the sweet is so that you do the sadhana properly, you know. So many times we are so attracted to the sweet that we forget that the reason Krishna is giving us the sweet is to, you know, focus on the process of sadhana. And therefore sometimes Krishna has to give us bitter medicines like this, where he's telling Uddhava straight away, all these sweets are useless. And somebody who takes shelter of the devotee, who helps you focus on the essence, that's the most important thing. So these reminders by Krishna, whether it is the Gita, whether it is in the Bhagavatam, just serve us to help us to understand that the reality is very different from what we apparently understand on a mental level. In a disease condition, we apparently happen to see these things as important. But in a healthy condition, we don't see this as important, but we focus on the essence of it, which is satisfying Krishna, sam siddhir haritoshanam. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.